I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, Data-Driven Defense Evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. Roger, welcome. Great to have you back with us today.
I'm always glad to be back for this podcast.
Awesome. So, Roger, to start off, I want to wish you congratulations on your most recently published book this week, available on Amazon, titled Ransomware Protection Playbook. What book number is this for you? And I guess additionally, what motivated you to write it?
So this is number 13, and I'm already working on the 14th and the 15th one. Certainly it's because ransomware is just everywhere. It's I think the stat that I saw, a couple stats said half of every business, at least that's responded to ransomware surveys, said they got hit by ransomware this year, half. And it's going to be worse next year. And there's some reputable places that are calculating every business will be hit by ransomware next year. I can't believe that's true, but I think on the low end, it's 50 to 70% are going to be hit by ransomware this year and next year. I mean, that's a pretty incredible, credible threat.
yeah, absolutely. And so I was able to take a peek at the table of contents of your new book and saw that in chapter one, you break out the types of ransomware. I know you and I have spoken about ransomware in the past, but it is so rampant. So, you know, it's always worthwhile to talk about. And when I've spoken with other guests in the past about ransomware, it's really just been used as more of like a generalized term, but there are, in fact, different types. So I'd love to hear from you for a little bit. What are some of the examples of the different types of ransomware? I think we're just thinking about one or maybe two types.
Yeah, you know, so I certainly it's there's been different types over the years. You know, 1989 with the Cyborg PC Trojan, that was the first one. And that was kind of a generic direct action infector, meaning that you download a Trojan horse program, and then when it goes off, it goes off. And then that kind of morphed over the years. They used to just go off. And it like, so you'd have an email or you get tricked into running it. It would just, you know, within 10 seconds, you know, just infect your machine and ask for $300. Then they realized that they could get more money by attacking corporations. So they really quickly turned into this ransomware program that was not a direct action Trojan. It was more of a stager, what they call a stager, or a stub file, or a downloader that really its entire duty was to gain initial access. And then it would, you know, it, at first they said, well, okay, steal passwords out of memory, steal these service account passwords and use that to spread around and infect more machines. Cause they started targeting networks, realized they could get more than $300 out of people if they attacked corporations, but they needed to infect and shut down the corporation. So they would collect network passwords and do that. So then it turned into these stager stub files where really their entire job was you just get initial access and then they dial home to the command and control servers and allow the attackers can connect into the command and control servers, which are really just somebody else's infected PC on the internet, and tell them, you know, and tell them this is where we broke in, and the hacker can come in at their leisure. You know, it can come in, it can look at the list of dozens to hundreds of victims and go, okay, this looks like a big one. And literally allows kind of a backdoor in that allows the attacker in. And so they've become really kind of this utility thing. Again, it's a stager. They're constantly updating themselves or downloading other malware program. They're getting instructions from the attacker, the owner, what to do. And then these days it's ransomware as a service, right? Where you're really just, you know, using this malware that's off a network that's constantly being updated. And the affiliates, as they call them, the people that kind of rent or subscribe to these ransomware programs, they can break into anybody they want or what's allowed by the software licensing restrictions. And I'm not saying that lightly. They actually do many times tell you what you can and can't break into. They want to avoid breaking into, let's say, their own home country. They want to avoid certain infrastructures because they don't want the police to get involved. If it, you know, like when they attack the Colonial Pipeline and the president's getting involved, no ransomware company wants that type of scrutiny.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, they're like a multi-level marketing firm, you know, in that they can do anything. And they actually moved from what people know as traditional malware to what's called, people call it double extortion, but it's really quintuple extortion, that you know, they figured out starting at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020, they started exfiltrating data and emails, and then they're exfiltrating credentials, not only credentials for the network, but really credentials of the employees. They would dwell for eight to 12 months and steal passwords at employees. So you're at work and you're, you know, going to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Maybe you decide to buy some garbage bags on the way home. You know, you're like, oh, I forgot that. Or I saw this book. I heard this book at lunch. I want to order this book from Amazon, not knowing you've just given up your credentials. You know, now maybe depending on the website, they've got your credit card numbers, social security number, your passport, you know, things like that. So there really is many different types of ransomware. I tell people, you get, if it's only 15-20% of it is that direct action Trojan, meaning you download a program, you run it, encrypts your machine. Like literally, if that, and there's still ones out there like that, like Cryptic Ransomware is a name of one of the families. If you get one like that, I mean, you're like lucky, right? And then let me say, some of them, especially from some of them from Iran and some other places where the programmers really aren't good, they're fake ransomware programs. So you get that, hey, we've locked up your machine, but all you got to do is learn how to close your browser.
Oh,
you know, like they really haven't locked up your machine. It's all fake. And sadly, there have been people, they get those fake FBI warnings. We've caught you surfing porn and we've taken pictures of you. There's been two cases of people that committed suicide.
Oh, no.
Over a fake ransomware threat. So, you know, you can get lucky and it's this fake ransomware, or maybe it's direct action and it only gets one machine. I mean, I did have a client of mine, a customer of ours. He called and said, well, they stole a bunch of files. He said, but those files were garbage. Like, like, yeah, they're trying to extort us, but they didn't take anything of value and they encrypted systems we really didn't care about. You know, you're like, missed opportunity on the attacker and they needed to do more research.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Fascinating. That's really fascinating. Thank you, Roger. And just as though, just how you laid out those examples of different types of ransomware really nicely, you really lay out everything nicely from start to finish in the book, going into detail about prevention, cyber insurance, a response plan, detection, minimizing damage, early response, and beyond. I'm not even listing everything, but what are some other highlights from the book that you think would be of interest and, I guess, value to our listeners, especially those CISOs who are getting questioned by their boards and C-suite counterparts on ransomware response plans, since it's become such a hot topic for them, you know, et cetera, and so on?
Yeah, you know, so to me, how it's different, let me say, there's so much out there about ransomware. You know, like even when I started doing research, I mean, there's hundreds, there's more studies and surveys and webinars on ransomware than you shake a stick at. That I literally, my goal was to try to contribute content of value, useful value, actionable value. And I got tired of people saying, oh, you want to defend against ransomware, use it, you know, have a good backup. Well, that's not defense, that's recovery.
Right.
So I think the primary thing my book does is talk about how to prevent it. I mean, it's only a chapter, but I do go back. I'm like, this is how ransomware breaks in using usable data, that it's usually social engineering. That's at least 50% of the problem. Then it's unpatched software. And then it's some type of password guessing, you know, and many times, you know, against not logon portals that we would typically, the password, most people think, oh, password guessing is against, you know, my Gmail account or O365 account, or even RDP, Microsoft's Remote Desktop Protocol. That is where a lot of the guessing is happening. Although a lot of times they're not guessing. They've got the legitimate logins and they just log in directly. Like no fake, no failed attempts. They've bought that access from somebody else that gained the access using social engineering or some other method, and they bought it for $500 and they get in. Literally, there are sites all around the world where you can go, you want to break into this company? I'll sell you, you know, $50, $500. I'll give you the login name and password that will get you in. So it's kind of like this, you know, like I call it lead gen for malware people. But so protection of how to prevent it and how to detect it. Like I would say how to prevent it is key, and not enough people, I'm tired of assume breach is you have to assume that you've, either you're already compromised or you could easily be compromised. And that today is the truth. That actually is the truth. And you do have to practice assume breach defenses. But I'm more about assume breach is for losers, let's stop breach. Let's stop making assume breach our primary defense. We do have to make it our primary defense because we're doing such a lousy job at preventing. So I really talk about how to prevent it. I talk about how to detect it. And let me tell you, it's not always easy. I think some people are going to read it and go, Roger, that's a lot of work. Like, if you want to prevent it, here, you know, I talk about the five ways to prevent it. You know, which can be summed up pretty quickly is prevent social engineering, use MFA where you can, use different long and complex passwords wherever you can't use MFA, and patch everything. You know, so it's those are really, that is 99% of the risk. 99% of the risk is just doing four things. Again, let me say them again, which is prevent social engineering, however you do that, patch your software, use MFA where you can, use different long and complex passwords wherever you don't use MFA. And if you want to prevent it, that's what you do, and you can prevent ransomware from being successful. Or let me say a lot better than today, which nobody's, you know, with 50 to 100% of people being hit in a year or two, that they're not being very successful. But I then say, if you want to detect it, like the average ransomware program dwells for 8 to 12 months without being detected. And that's a crime. To me, 85% of victims had up-to-date running antivirus programs, you know, and firewalls and all the other accoutrements you think that we're all supposed to be running. It either means that those defenses didn't work, which is probably the majority of the answer, but it's also in, you know, unequal application of those things. And somebody missed something somewhere. They missed a patch. They don't have antivirus running somewhere, whatever. Or they're not, you know, like for password guessing, they block the logon portal with account lockout, but they don't block their application programming interface. That is where something like 60 to 85% of password attacks are against application programming interfaces, not against the traditional login portals that we would think. So if they get in, though, I then talk about to detect them, you have to do what's called process detection, meaning you have an excellent idea of what should be running on your network and every device. And you need to know your called network traffic flow detection. So if somebody if something's connecting out to Russia, let me say almost all ransomware, not all, but the vast majority of ransomware comes from Russia. I think Microsoft recently said that 58% of all customer reported attacks were from Russia. 58%, one country. But if you do not have customers or products or a legitimate reason to connect to Russia, maybe any connection to a Russian asset should be investigated. But if you don't monitor your network traffic to know where it's going, good luck. So the other part of my book is, listen, if you want to stop ransomware, obviously antivirus detection is not doing the job. Firewalls aren't doing the job. And there's all kinds of things you do, but you need to do what's called process detection or application control, where you understand what should be running on every device across your network. And let me say this. I don't think a single person listening to this podcast knows what's running on their own personal device, much less across their entire network. It is not easy to do, but we should know that. It is not good that we don't know what's running across our network. And there are tools. There's, you know, endpoint detection response software, application control. I can take Microsoft AppLocker as an example, or many other programs out there that do this, where you snapshot every machine and you say, okay, everything that I just snapshotted, I baselined, it's allowed to run. If something new pops up, I then block it and I have to get permission to run it. Like, if you want to stop ransomware, there's your answer. Run application control programs in prevention mode. Or I go further and say, okay, if you can't do prevention, because prevention requires a lot of planning and you got to have a committee around it and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
At least do detection, which is every time there's something new, at least detect that something new got executed. Don't block it, but detect that it's new and then research it till you find out whether it was good or bad. And if you do not do that, if you do not hire a service that does that, now, and let me say, you can do that. You can run application control in prevention mode. Microsoft's had it built into all their operating systems since XP through software restriction policies and AppLocker and now Windows Defender application control. And there's a ton of commercial products out there that are really, really good. You can do it. And I talk about in the book how to do it for cheaper, but it's not as easy. But you can buy cheaper, you can buy easy, but do it. If you don't do it, then you have to accept that you're probably at far higher risk of getting hit by ransomware. And that's what the book kind of covers. Like, this is what you have to do to prevent it. And if you don't do it, then you're probably at high risk of being hit. So I think it's, you know, prevention is the big thing I offer in there. I do offer, hey, this is what you do in the first hours, the first day, the first week, 2 weeks afterwards, how you rebuild things back. But I think the other part is it's a hard wake up call about this is what you should do to stop it. This is what you need to do to prevent it and detect it, early warning detection, and also how to handle cyber insurance. I think I have one of the best chapters on cyber insurance and how to figure out if you're legally at risk for paying the ransom and things like that. So I don't know. There's no one right way, but I think I offer good content, actionable content that can help people, you know, that are looking for a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like it. Absolutely. And you mentioned some of those statistics at the beginning of our conversation. And one that I'd like to share is we at Cybersecurity Ventures predict that ransomware damage costs will exceed $265 billion by year 2031, with attacks on businesses, consumers, or devices occurring every 2 seconds. So pretty substantial. What do you foresee as the future of ransomware, Roger?
So by the way, you know, I think everybody that initially sees y'all's figures calls BS on it. And I think y'all are far closer to the real number than anybody else. You know, when you take everything into consideration, and like, especially if you add into, hey, I got hit by ransomware and now I have to buy everything I should have bought before.
Yeah, true.
You know, is that, I don't know if that's called damage, but it is a cost, and it's not and cyber insurance is not going to cover you updating your network and rebuilding your, like, cybersecurity insurance, even the best, gets you back to where you were before your attack. But you're like, you know, we need MFA now. Mm. You know, if you didn't have MFA before, it's not like your insurance company is covering that cost, right? So I think the majority of the cost people don't know is they're finally doing what they should have done before they got hit. But, you know, let me tell you, you ready for this? I think this, what I'm getting ready to tell you, nobody else has said. I'm going to form an entire webinar. I'm going to write about it soon. I always write about everything, but I'm getting ready to say what I think nobody has said on air yet.
Okay.
So if I've lost you, if you're going to sleep, wake up. So the future of ransomware, if I look at the evolution, is they went from just encrypting to double and then quintuple extortion. Now you're starting to see where they're, and they've been doing this about a year here and there. Sometimes they're doing distributed denial of service attacks. Like the ransomware gang's like, hey, we're going to denial of service attack your website or your service and you pay us. Like they don't encrypt anything. They don't steal anything. It's just pure denial of service attack stuff, DDoS stuff. Which has been going on for decades, but the ransomware people are doing it. And I think what I'm seeing is the trend that they're going to, being the businessmen that they are, illegal and unethical, but they are businessmen,
right,
and women, I assume, that they're going to maximize the value of every victim. I think the future of ransomware is that every victim gets seen as a pot of gold. And the attacker says, okay, if I'm in here and they detect me, or if I ransomware, I get a certain amount of money. But if I break in here, let me steal as much information as I can, as much confidential information and business secrets and emails and database and records. I can turn those records, I can either sell them to a competitor or I can turn them into some database that I offer from what looks like a legitimate company. I can do crypto mining. They've got all these computers not doing anything. I'll turn them into crypto miners. I'm going to steal people's credit cards and I'll steal the credit. I'll steal and sell the credit cards and the credit carding forums. I'll use their computers to distribute denial of service attacks on people. And what I think they're going to do, and let me say, I'm fairly confident of this, is that they're going to look at every victim as a potential cash cow and go, okay, what is the way that I maximize the extraction of value from what we've compromised? I mean, to be honest with you, you know, when they went from just encrypting to, hey, we're going to do data exfiltration and stuff like that, they're like, can you believe it that we used to just encrypt stuff? I think they're going to go to, can you believe all we did was encrypt and steal stuff? Like that they're going to do as much as they can. And then when they start to, you know, they find out they're about to be detected, boom, then they'll hit the encryption. So I think the future of ransomware, and it's going to get worse. Like every year I go, people go, do you think it's going to get worse? And you're like, I remember 2 or 3 years ago, I was like, okay, ransomware is hitting any company they want. They're taking out hospitals, police departments, entire cities. Multiple entire cities were taken up by ransomware. How could it get worse? There's no way it can get worse, but I've been doing this for 34 years. I go, it's going to get worse. And then it turned out they started doing double and quintuple extortion. And now I'm sitting here this year going, okay, they're breaking into 50% of everything to 100%. They're doing quintuple extortion. How could it get worse? And I thought, oh, they're leaving value on the ground. And those attackers, as it gets tougher to be a ransomware person, you know, you've got 120, 130 gangs right now. It's going to dwindle down to a smaller number, let's say 10 or 20. It's not like any business goes from making $100 million or $1 billion to accepting only making 10 million.
Right.
I mean, they're in business.
Right.
They want to increase the revenue somewhere. There's somebody in these companies going, okay, we made 1 billion last year. We got to do 1.1 billion this year.
They have a growth plan.
Yeah. I mean, when you hear the ransomware guys talk or some of their rebuttals, like when the Colonial Pipeline thing happened and that the ransomware spokesperson was like, listen, that was one of our affiliates and he, you know, violated our terms of agreement or whatever. Yeah. But listen, we've tightened our terms of agreement. We agree with you. This is terrible. And we're going to make sure it doesn't. We've taken steps to make sure it does. I was like, I'm listening to some CEO do damage control, totally. Right? Crisis management. And then when the grain companies got hit a couple of weeks ago, the grain company and their message, the messages to the ransomware people were found and put online. The negotiator for the grain company said, hey, I thought you weren't supposed to attack us. I thought we were in one of the 16, you know, protected industries. And the ransomware guys, we've done our analysis and we disagree with that assessment. You know, not like you're out of luck, but it was like some business response, right? Because these are business people. They're unethical, illegal right. business people, but they are smart people. That you can look at their infrastructure. They're smart. They're protected in host countries that are allowing them to do whatever they want to do. They're worth, you know, billions. One of the main ransomware malware purveyors in Russia drives around in a Lamborghini that has thief in Russian on his license plate.
Oh, yeah. Ugh.
You know, these are not people. These are not fat guy in basement drinking joke cola, right?
Right.
And he's got affiliate programs. And I heard one of them talking. And he was saying, listen, you know, they were asking like, oh, the interviewer said, I heard some of your workers left and went to work, started a new ransomware gang. He's like, yes, that's true. But we're doing better to try to limit, you know, employee attrition. We think we've addressed those issues. And we're talking to our affiliates. We think we offer good value for, you know, good value for the money that they're spending. Wow. And let me tell you, we think competition is good for everybody. And we think we've got some great features coming out next year. And again, I'm like, is this guy from Ransomware Inc. or Microsoft?
Sounds like a keynote.
Yeah. I think there's no doubt in my mind the future is that they're going to monetize more potential revenue streams and that only the dumb ones will only do ransomware and double extortion. So that's the future of ransomware, is that they really become hack everything gangs. And it's not all going to be about ransom. Ransom is the endpoint, but they're going to do everything else. So, you know, and when they're like, they're not going to say, hey, if you don't pay us, we're going to exfiltrate your data. They don't care. They're going to make more money exfiltrating your data on other markets.
Right.
And so, you know, it's things are going to get worse before they get better. But let me also say that I am working during every waking hour to try to defeat them. I'm working with everybody I can at senior levels of, you know, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. I am seeing good things happen. Like I just saw CISA said that they're going to require EDR endpoint management response software on all their managed providers, and that they actually want to manage or take a look at those endpoints to see if they're configured correctly. That is a huge step. They're trying to force organizations to turn over information, to report that they've been hacked. And even have fines with it if people don't report that information. We're starting to see some big moves. We're starting to see some geopolitical things. So they're trying to shut down some of the bigger cryptocurrency exchanges that, you know, there's a Russian-based guy. I think it's the same guy with thief on his license plate or whatever, but he's like, you know, they put like $1 billion of cryptocurrency from he's attached 8 ransomware families, launder money through him, but he's not affiliated with ransomware. That's all lies. And we're going to sue you. And I'm like, good luck with that evidence. But, you know, it's, it's so what's happened, it's going to go more professional and extract more things of value from victims. So it's not a good future yet. And until we rebuild the internet, it's not going to get any better. But that's a discussion for another day, I guess.
Yeah, we can definitely have that on another episode. I think that'd be really interesting. We've touched upon it before too, but I think it would be a cool deep dive. Well, speaking of, you know, maximizing the value of every victim, and ransomware certainly not going away quickly. I saw this morning on Cybercrime Magazine's feed, which is titled "Who's Hacked? Latest Data Breaches and Cyber Attacks," which updates daily via ZDNet, that Quest Diagnostics informed the SEC about a ransomware attack in August that hit ReproSource, which is a fertility clinic owned by the company. And this resulted in a data breach exposing a significant amount of health and financial information for about 350,000 ReproSource patients. And to quote ZDNet, a trove of health information was also leaked during the attack, including CPT codes, diagnosis codes, test requisitions and results, test reports, medical history information, health insurance, group plan identification names, numbers, and other information provided by individuals or by treating physicians. And the company admitted that an undisclosed number of people also had driver's license numbers, passport numbers, social security numbers, financial account numbers, credit card numbers leaked in the attack. And, you know,
that's all, Hillary.
That's just it. That's all that, you know, very small amounts of things. And I know that, Roger, you've shared many times that, you know, if someone wants these things, they can go out looking for them. But I mean, a fertility clinic, you know, ReproSource is the second fertility clinic this year to send out breach notifications to patients after a ransomware attack. I mean, it sounds like this basically upholds what you were just saying. I mean, the attackers, they're attacking fertility clinics. That's deplorable. Like, what is the end game here? It doesn't seem like there is. It seems like the end game, the answer to my question that I was going to pose to you, is the maximization of the value of every victim. But I'd love to hear more from you.
Yeah, you know, I think they're, you know, so most people are compromised because they're victims of opportunity. They were sent, you know, they're one of a trillion people sent this phishing email and they just got tricked. But then you do have certain ransomware actors and other malware hackers that attack certain industries. And usually that's because they have personal experience or they've gained personal experience. So the phishing techniques are targeted for that industry. You know, every industry has its own vernacular and acronyms and way that people speak to each other. And, you know, so these attackers, if they know that information, you know, they can ask you, hey, you know, I heard they're updating the CPT codes for this operation, you know, for this type of thing here. Oh, here's the new CPT codes. Well, that wouldn't mean anything to 99% of the people. But if you work in the medical field around CPT codes, you know, then it would become something that you care about and be more likely to get you to open it. So there are definitely different groups that target. And also, when they break in with somebody, they go through their email and see who else they're emailing. So that could be, it could just be that they're now establishing the relationship in the industry because they're going through people's emails and being able to find other people affiliated in the industry. But, you know, I think the scary part may be, let's say like DNA, like, you know, our DNA is everywhere and stuff and your medical history. Let's say in that case that like when you're in that infertility clinic, you're sharing every illness and problem you've ever had, right?
Right.
And that is a value to insurance companies. Like, and it isn't that necessarily a malware purveyor goes, hey, I've got all these stolen medical records. I don't think it's that way. I think that it's somebody that poses as a legitimate company and says, hey, we have the ability to send you a list of people that have these, you know, this particular problem. So let me say some expensive problem that an insurance company wouldn't want to deal with. And so if you have a list of all of these people, then, you know, maybe even it could be like maybe people that undergo one fertility treatment and it doesn't work. What's the likelihood they'll undergo a second one? And that could be expensive if it was actually covered by insurance. I don't think it is most of the time. But, you know, I could see them creating databases of legitimate information. So there, it was obtained illegitimately, but then is turned into a legitimate database and laundered through another company that's just posing as somebody that has this information. Like every time I join a computer conference like RSA or, you know, Black Hat, or even I work with some vendors. I've written white papers for vendors, and I always get people emailing me to sell me their customer list. And I'm like, well, how has this been obtained? Is it a fake list? Is it a real list? But it's kind of weird. Like I get this particular mailing list from a cybersecurity vendor I did a white paper for years ago. I frequently get somebody offering me to give me their stolen customer list. Their customer list. But this customer would not be sharing their customer list. And I think, are they compromised? You know, how do they even know to target me? It's not in the top 10 computer security companies most people think about. So it could be just accidental, but it seems as if they knew that I was affiliated with this company, even though I did the white paper anonymously. So it's as if they've broken into their records, found my email address, and now offering me this information. But overall, I think it is, you know, a wild and woolly world. And certainly in many unethical countries, many countries of cyber criminal safe havens, and there are plenty of them out there, most distinctly Russia, you know, this information, once it's stolen, can be turned into a real database and then offered as some type of legitimate thing. You know, it's funny, there's two, my joke now is, you know, there's two sides of the privacy equation. One person that's always shocked going, I can't believe my privacy has been violated again. And another person saying, who cares? I just assume everything about me is out there, you know, and it's not like I like it, but, it's just life, and it's been that way. And if you're getting upset about your medical record stolen, you're getting upset about something that really probably occurred many years ago. Every time you hear about the latest company compromised, even this fertility clinic, and you know, Quest and all this stuff, that's just who you heard about in this article. I mean, almost every company, if not every company, is compromised, have been compromised. Because you know why? We do a really crappy job at preventing hackers and malware, and we could do a significantly better job. That is my life's objective. That's what I'm going to spend the rest of my career doing, helping people stop attacks from being successful, because we do not do that very well at all, and we could.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really great point. I never even thought of, creating an aggregate database and, you know, stolen information and then passing it off as legitimate. That's devious, but also somewhat ingenious, unfortunately. Just so in such the bad actors are so innovative, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, you know, what was the other joke that, like, when somebody breaks into, you know, these guys break into Facebook and steal all these records, they're like, Facebook is only mad because they didn't get paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I like Facebook. I'm not a Facebook hater, but there's a lot of truth to that, right? Our data is out there in a lot of places.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Roger, this has been so much fun as usual. I'm, again, really excited for you and your new book. And, I'm excited for the next couple of books and more white papers from you and to speak next week. Always a pleasure.
Yes, yes. Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening in.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. And you can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.